Welcome to the Lost Stop podcast and the fourth edition of the Trans-Pyrenees race, supported by our race partners, Pedaled, Telfin, Komoot, and Peak Design. It's day six at TPO number four, and as expected, at 4:55 a.m, Fiona Kolbinger, cap number four, arrives at the finish line in Girona as the fastest woman to complete this year's Trans-Pyrenees race, and to take seventh position overall. After swapping positions a few times with Molly Weaver, cap number 9, in the first half of the race, Fiona developed and maintained a gap along the Ray Parkour all the way to the Mediterranean Sea and into the finish. The team in Control Car 2 were there in Girona to welcome Fiona. She had chain issues on the final parkour and had to cycle through the driving rain, which soaked everything, including her Brevet card.
Thanks for being awake.
Not at all.
Man, is that the cycling gods punishing me for not training enough, or what?
How did the hands get black?
Just from my chain. So at some point I had my chain wrapped around my my paddle three times.
Yeah.
Three times.
Yeah.
So I sat there with my bike on my knees and pulled everything together to sort of untangle it, and I'm sure it's bent in some way.
Okay.
I'm not sure this is stampable.
Is it?
Yeah.
We'll hear from Fiona again in our next episode, but back on the Ray Parkour, race reporter Tom Probert and the team in Control Car 1 are on the hunt for riders to speak to.
We're up bright and early as usual, trying to find riders, and we spotted that the pair, number 101, Toon and Yorna, had been staying in either a campsite or a little hotel in a town called Cadillac, just before the Perisord, and their dots were greyed out, but we suspected they might be getting up soon. So we've gone to investigate, and we've gone down a tiny little road and found the hotel that they're looks like they're staying in, and just on time as we've got here, their dots have sprung into life, which means that they're not necessarily on the move, but they're up and about and getting prepared. So we're going to see if we can find out how their ride is going. It's quite late, relatively speaking, for these riders to be getting up. It's 9 a.m. here. So we suspect they've probably had a bit of a rough night, or they've had to push through later than expected. So we'll find out what's been going on.
Considering to scratch. Yeah. So because we had a very lovely evening here with the guys cooking for us, and with the soup, and then we made a phone call home to our wives. And we had two scenarios, basically the race mode versus the touring. Mm-hmm. So basically, we didn't have to sacrifice any sleep so far. We had nights of 7 hours, and we just calculated, okay, 3 days of 4,500 to 5,000 elevation gain, mm-hmm. basically like yesterday, but without the rain. So only going hard, sacrificing some sleep versus rerouting, doing two more moderate days to Girona, mm-hmm. so we'll still finish it.
Yeah,
and then surprising the wives with some flowers and coming home one day early. So that's a bit the thing, and we would still follow the next mountain, because I think Mike Hall also once said, "Don't scratch in an emotional setup late in the evening or at night." Just think. So we will continue for 50k and then make it a call. But I think we're leaning towards deviating and taking the gentle route out of the Pyrenees.
Paul Williams, cap 84, is taking on the Col de Perisord and beginning to find the race pretty hard going.
I'm struggling to even carry on, so I'm just going to try and make it to the end.
Yeah. And so has it been in those moments, because obviously you've been at the point where most people would just call it a day, what are you doing mentally? How are you managing to find the resolve to carry on in those moments?
1 kilometre at a time.
Yeah.
Break it down, and... You know, I'm only 4k from the top of this climb, thinking about coffee and breakfast. And the truth is that the irony is that the bit that I went over last night, the Col d'Aspin, was beautiful, and I did have probably half an hour of feeling amazing as well. So it comes back. So I do know that if you go through the bad times, it feels, it does eventually kind of return.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm
amazing.
Hoping right. for.
Well done for carrying on. And that's probably you through the worst bit now, so.
Who knows? This is a tough, tough race.
Yeah.
And you can never be sure until the last moment about that you can carry on. I'm struggling, I've got blisters on my hands, so struggling to hold the bike in some positions.
Yeah.
Struggling to get over about 150 watts of power today.
Yeah.
But I'll see. I hope to still make it by Saturday to the end, and that'll be an achievement.
With its iconic cols and breathtaking scenery, the Ray Parkour is an essential feature of the Trans-Pyrénées race. Increasingly, the same can be said of the infamous McDonald's in the small town of Tarascon. Race reporter Tom is there again, convinced he'll find at least one rider to speak to. And of course, he is correct. David Sanchez, Cap 22.
This looks like a feast you've got here.
Yeah.
What's on the menu?
Some cheeseburgers, but they're all for the takeaway.
How many are you taking away? Four?
Four, but I don't think it's enough. But I think it's the first time in life that I take apples at the McDonald's to take away.
Is that like a kid's apple?
Yeah,
pack?
It was on the kid's menu.
Yeah.
I had to find it. Yeah. But I think for the riding, it will be good to have some fruits, some good vitamins, and not to rely only on sugar.
Do you think you've chosen that because you're feeling a bit ill?
No, because I think my body needs vitamin and not only sugar and bad stuff. Yeah. From the brain.
Your brain as
yeah.
well. You're starting to feel a bit sluggish and a bit,
bit
brain fog?
No, it's fine. Like, just to take care of myself and like convince me it's healthy to go to McDonald's.
Yeah, you balance out 5 cheeseburgers, chicken nuggets, 7 chips, with 2 bags of apples.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god, you've got donuts as well.
Yeah, for a takeaway also. Yeah.
Yeah, this is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you enjoy the kind of eating part of riding? Like, I know obviously McDonald's is trash, but is it quite enjoyable to be able to come in and do a crazy order like this?
It's enjoyable to hit inside and to be seated in a table like and have an oatmeal.
Yeah.
That's what I was looking for.
Another rider enjoying the visit to McDonald's is Jean-Christophe Huch, Cap 75.
Yeah, I'm doing fine. And today it's actually a good day compared to yesterday.
What was bad yesterday?
I don't know. Didn't have the legs, didn't have the morale to push on. So I think sorry, I was a bit down with the rain.
Yeah.
And yeah, I stopped early, I called it a day, like after Castillon-Couseron. I was soaking wet and yeah, just couldn't go any further. It was only like maybe 140k day, but yeah, didn't feel like it. And yeah, find a good guest house down the road. There was like this big fireplace and I just sat on a big chair next to it. There was a cat to pet, and yeah, but it was great. So I had a good night,
yeah.
And good feelings from this morning. So, and I was a bit worried because this morning going down Col de Corde, I could feel that something was off with the brake pads, and actually they were both worn out.
Yeah.
So I only had one spare, so I knew I could change it here. But I called ahead and there is like a little shop in town, and the guys were just great, so make a quick swap. and all set to go to Girona.
Wow. Yeah. What a turnaround. So you've gone from everything bad to suddenly everything
was bad and everything is fine today. So yeah. I guess.
Amazing, and you're celebrating with a McDonald's.
I don't know if it's celebrating, but you feel the whole.
What did you eat?
No, just classic burgers. I don't know. Need the calories.
Ben Chouillon, Cap 22, is also taking a break from the saddle in Tarascon. Tom finds him looking to resupply in a local supermarket, proving it is possible to pass through the town without succumbing to the temptation of those glistening golden arches.
I just did some stretches and booked myself a hotel.
Booked myself a hotel for tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they rang and said that, they said, oh, are you doing the Trans-Pyrenees race? You've had people in coming through already. And like, oh yeah, we've got a sauna, we'll get a bath running for you, we can do a dinner. So they're like really, really nice.
Did you cry?
Almost. So yes, that was a surprise, you know.
So how far do you have to ride to get to that?
I don't know, about 80 or 90 k's, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound too bad, but then obviously it's probably insane elevation, isn't it?
I started super early today, so okay. I think I'm just do the same again, you know, just finish early. Start early tomorrow.
Yeah.
I would like to finish before 7 a.m. on Saturday.
All right, we've got that logged, got that recorded, so we'll hold you to that, yeah.
Because then I would be under 8 days, which would be nice, but we'll see. And that, like, you know, that'd be whatever. That'd be the 8th.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Anyway, it's a target.
Yeah.
It means I'd have most of Saturday to chill out. I don't want to just arrive just in time for the party. I've done that before, but yeah. I'm hoping not to this year. So.
Nice. I like we're getting into the details now, planning the arrival time.
Well, we're getting closer, aren't we? Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good sign. Tom here from Control Car 1. We've spent the afternoon driving east to try and catch up with Georges Jux and Florent de Boisvilliers. So we've kind of taken the fast route on some big roads and we've just cut back into the raid parkour now around the Col de Saint-Louis, and the whole landscape has dramatically changed from where we were in the High Pyrenees. It's become kind of quintessential Mediterranean landscape, really, with lots of sun-bleached grass, lots of very, very scrubby kind of vegetation, and very hardy, kind of rubbery trees. Everything looks like it's been in a hot environment, a hot kind of dry environment. The weather's really cleared up after the storm and all the rainy conditions that we've had, and we're back to bright blue skies and tiny little fluffy white clouds. There is quite a breeze whipping around here though. I think this will be very, very welcomed by all the riders. And it's a really stunning bit of road on the parkour here. It's what the other guys in the control car described as a loop-the-loop, twisting and turning and kind of going back on itself. Really, really tight, round hairpins, and all the time surrounded by absolutely stunning scenery. So it's certainly one that I'd like to be riding. Just found Florent. I was waiting for him to come up the climb, but he's just stopped for some reason, so I'm going to run down and have a chat with him. How's everything going? How did you find the rain?
Awful. Yesterday I stopped after Col d'Agnès and Port de l'Hers, but maybe I need to stop before because the rain was very hard. Lot of cold wind.
Yeah.
My finger was totally frozen. Impossible to grab the bottle to drink.
Yeah.
And there is no shelter. The only way is continue to ride. And I'm very lucky. I have no puncture. If I have a puncture, I don't know how I do with that my finger.
Yeah.
It's next time I think I will stop before.
So you survived the storm anyway in the end. Yeah.
For the moment, it's okay.
You look like you're going well. You look quite fresh.
Yeah, it's okay. I think we. I will stop this evening in Prad.
Yeah.
And after, I think about 200 kilometers to finish. Uh-huh. So it's okay.
On the final straight.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Nice.
Afternoon on day 6, and Control Car 1 has travelled further east along the Raypar Corps, where they bump into Matthias Ulrich, Cap 78, as he takes on yet another beautiful, grueling climb, the Col de Mouly.
I think it's so nice to think that at this very moment, right now, there's so many riders in very different locations experiencing different emotions, different feelings, you know. Maybe they suffer climbing a col, others have the best time of their life while descending and enjoying a sunset or so. And I think that's kind of, that's magic almost, or magical, I would say, yeah. I was descending the big col. Oh, there are so many different names, I forgot the name. And I was overwhelmed by, I was listening, when I descended the pass there, suddenly the sun would rise. I was descending and my favorite soundtrack would come, and like everything came together, and I was really overwhelmed by emotions. I even had to cry, and it was so, of course it was of the tiredness as well, but I think it was so, yeah, awesome. Absolutely, very emotional, yeah.
What was the song?
The song is called Scharlachrot, and it's from a Bernese band called Patent Ochsna. And Scharlachrot means scarlet red, and kind of fit the scenery as well. I mean, that's like magic, really. Everything came together, and you ask yourself, okay, why? And this is so great, and I'm so grateful also to experience. I mean, you always think of special moments in your life, right? When you link the songs to certain moments in your life, and that comes up all the time you hear the song again. So this is why it's so, yeah, emotional.
Yeah, and now you've got that for the future.
As well, yeah. You're right, yeah.
Cool.
One more memory to add. Yeah.
With the race cut-off time for general classification at midnight on Saturday, many of our riders are starting to think about the finish line, including Frank Gabarou, Cap 97.
So now two freer and then
finish.
Yes.
Victory.
So amazing.
Gagné.
Next up. And the weather this year?
Yeah.
Awful.
Not easy.
Freezing.
Yeah. You had a puncture as well, I see.
Yeah, today, just after I've depassed my concurrent.
Okay.
Then, shit. Yes, because him, see on the tracker, stop it.
Yeah.
And I slowly, because I've not tired.
Okay.
I have a little tick, but
okay.
I'm too tired.
Close, yeah. Not far. Yeah. Well, good luck. Bonne chance.
Merci, thank you.
Bon courage.
Late evening, and George Jukes, Cap 96, is getting ready to ride again after a few hours' afternoon sleep in what happens to be the same hotel Control Car 1 are staying in tonight. Tom grabs George for a quick chat before he gets on the road.
So you just did a huge stint without sleep before this, didn't you?
Yeah, I did about sort of 27 hours.
Yeah.
It was really good. It caught me up. I was really far back.
Yeah.
I've now lost some of that again, but hopefully when I'm rested, I'm faster than most people on the mountains. But that's when I'm rested.
We were following you in the car yesterday.
Yeah, I think I saw, because that was when I was right at the back.
Yeah. It was just as you were like setting off, and we all said, oh, he looks like he's riding with purpose. He looks really strong, really fast.
Yeah, I felt really strong that day, but so that sort of faded through the night, and I ended up crawling my way up here, and now I'm hoping that after having slept for 4.5 hours, that's a ridiculous time to sleep at a hotel from 4 to 8, but after having slept for 4 hours, I can be strong again and just push on to the finish.
It's 6:36 p.m. and Molly Weaver is the second woman to roll into Girona. She also takes 8th position overall, which means that this is the first Transpyrenees race to see two women take top 10 positions. Lost Dots media manager Taylor Doyle is in Girona and catches up with Molly to see how she's feeling after such an impressive ride.
I don't know, I think it's been one of those years where so much stuff has happened, so much like emotional processing, that normally like you go into an ultra and that's where you kind of, you're taken out of like your normal life and stuff. You process things, you have all these deep emotional things, but I almost needed just to be blank. Like I need to escape all the emotional things, whereas normally you like want to have those deep moments and those insular moments. Whereas I was more just, oh, okay, I'm just riding my bike and nothing else matters.
How was it racing against Fiona, who is somebody that has such a big influence on like Lost Art history?
I mean, it was like no pressure on me, which was quite cool. Like, I was like, well, I'm like, no one cares that I'm here because she's here, so I can just like fly under the radar and not really have to do anything.
Not true.
But I don't know. Yeah, it was cool. I think it was cool to have. It is rare, unfortunately, in like ultra racing in general, for there to be a competitive women's race or there to be women around the top of the race overall. Yeah. Like, that is quite a rare thing. Normally, you'd think maybe the best singular woman might come in the top 10 overall. That's normally where they sit, but there's rarely then a second one. And quite often there's none. And it was quite cool to be like, oh, we're also in this space.
Yeah.
So more so than the directly like racing against her kind of thing. It was like, oh, isn't it cool that we're like both inhabiting this space and that's like just normal and like, yeah, that was a cool thing. It didn't feel like you were just like the token woman or something.
That's absolutely amazing. And yeah, in the whole history of TPR, we've only ever had one woman within the top 10, and this is the first time we've had two. So thank you, Molly, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Join us in our next episode as more riders make their way safely into Girona and over the finish line at TPR number 4. We'll also find out if those climbing the coals of the Ray Parkour are able to summon all the resolve they have to push on and inch ever closer to the Mediterranean Sea. It's been a race of punishing climbs, made even more difficult by challenging, changing weather conditions. No doubt, the Pyrenees Mountains have more in store for those riders still out on the road. Remember, you can read Stuart's daily race reports from the road on the Lost Dot website and get regular updates across all our social media channels. Thanks to our race partners, Pedaled, Tailfin, Komoot, and Peak Design.